Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on today's programme.
Fundamentally, it's about activation. It's how many bodies can we put together with a common purpose or this common sense of community within community.
How can we view our urban centres differently? On the show ahead, we look at some projects offering a fresh perspective on their urban environments. We explore a project in the shadow of Mount Fuji that is weaving technology into the city from the ground up. See how a revitalised historic building in the Saskatchewan capital is slowing sprawl and sparking a downtown revival. And we take a walk on the sunnier side of the street here in London. That's all coming up in the next 30 minutes right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. Well, we start today in Japan. A few hours by train southwest of Tokyo, a new type of city is being built. Designed to be a petri dish for smart city innovations, Woven City aims to demonstrate a human-centred approach to community development. The brainchild of the Japanese automotive manufacturer Toyota, Woven City will feature three types of streets woven together, one for automated driving, one for pedestrians, and one for personal mobility vehicles. Woven City is being built on the former site of the Toyota Motor East Japan factory and hopes to form a living laboratory to accelerate innovation around mobility technology. It will also invite smart city innovators to be residents in the city to work on their projects at the city scale. Well, recently I caught up with James Kufner, the CEO of Woven Planet Holdings, to talk about the company's vision for this new community in the foothills of Mount Fuji and what stage of the construction process it's currently at.
We were able to, despite the pandemic, break ground successfully this February. It will take some time, but this project will be expanding over the next several years. And we hope to, in the meantime, push forward a lot of the technology development in parallel. So that's what we are doing at this moment. We have the Woven City management team at the Woven Planet company that is headquartered here in Tokyo. And our team is working with many of the other stakeholders and partners to push forward smart energy, technology for mobility, robotics. And also we are looking at how new technology for education and how people work, study, and move in the future can be transformed. In many ways, the pandemic, despite all of the terrible consequences, has caused people to rethink many of these issues in how we live and work.
I've looked at lots of the mock-ups, the renders that have been put out of what the city will look like. And I must say that for a company that some years ago had been called a car maker, very little transportation even in sight in many of the pictures. So tell us something about how people will get around and perhaps why it's all not so visible.
That's a great question. As you know, Toyota has spent a lot of its history, over 80 years, making ever better cars. And realizing that the industry is changing with new technology, the president announced a few years ago that we are becoming not just a car company, but a mobility company. And one of the real missions is to create safe, accessible mobility for everyone. And how to achieve that. And when you look at the renderings of the city, one of the most exciting things and innovative things about the thoughtful design is a separation of mobility for pedestrians, medium speed mobility, personal mobility devices, for example, or bicycles. And then you have higher speed mobility cars or automated driving shuttles that would take people around. And they're woven together, intentionally hearkening to the name of Woven City. And one last thing I'll say is, despite the weaving together of the different mobilities and modes of transportation around the city, there's also going to be underground transportation, mostly targeted for the mobility of goods. You know, right now our cities are quite crowded and congested with trucks that are delivering packages or hauling away garbage. And at the same time, you've got passengers trying to get around as well. And can we separate those and have the logistics happen more invisibly and have the walking surfaces on the ground level designed more around the mobility of people? So that's one of the things we're experimenting with, and we're building this tunnel system for logistics transport, which I think will be really, really amazing and innovative.
Just tell me, much of the debate that comes out from all of these companies that have now rebadged as mobility businesses is the desire to move to driverless vehicles. And I understand some of the appeal around driverless, the added safety, potentially if you have cameras look every which way, for example. But I sometimes wonder when we look at our cities, although there's a desire for perhaps less traffic on our streets, whether there is the craving, for example, for driverless vehicles. I don't know anybody who has ever tapped me on the shoulder and said, I just wish I had a driverless vehicle. I wonder what the take up really is, or what the desire for these technologies is, and whether you think that, yeah, maybe some of this is experimentation, not all of it will get delivered to cities, some of it will come faster or slower, or whether you think this really is a vision of what our cities will look like in the near future.
I think there is a lot of unknown. The technology is changing fast. But to be honest, Toyota as a company has tried to build products that people love. And our president, being a master driver himself, loves cars. And he was initially quite skeptical about automated driving or driverless cars. But, you know, many people actually love to drive, especially if you're driving in a top-down convertible along the highway on the ocean. But nobody really likes commuting. I think that's quite fair to say. And the other thing that changed a lot of people's minds is the fact when you meet blind people, or if you meet people who are simply too old to drive. In fact, all of us eventually may become too old to drive. I had recently had to take away the car keys to my father-in-law because it's not safe anymore. And, you know, that loss of mobility means a dramatic impact on the quality of life. So I think when we look at these driverless technologies, although many people talk about driverless taxis, and of course there's a huge business potential there, I think there's also a quality of life issue. And there is also the potential that this technology can dramatically improve safety. You know, we can make these vehicles, in some sense, never run red lights, never drive recklessly or drunk, and we can create safe mobility in the future. You know, the sad reality is that there's over 1 million people dying every year. In many cases, these accidents are attributed to human error. So I do think there's a great potential. But I think you're right. There are a lot of people who maybe have no desire, but I think there is an incredible potential to provide some accessibility for people who cannot drive and have lost the freedom of mobility, and also the potential to dramatically change and improve safety of our cities and our urban centers and transportation in general.
The other interesting thing is, you know, that obviously we've seen some of these cities built before, you know, Masdar City by Abu Dhabi, which I went to see. They're interesting, but they also necessitate being built in places where you don't have much underground already or much history already. So, for example, if you tried to even put in a tram line in London, it would be almost impossible to do it. You can't redirect the traffic. If you dig a hole in this city, you strike a water main within 2 seconds. So putting in, for example, highways underneath the city to carry garbage trucks, I just don't think it could ever happen. So is much of your technology being developed for places where new cities are being constructed? So is your market emerging cities in China, for example, rather than thinking this is the kind of technology you could have one day have in Paris or in Rome?
I think the goal is to develop technologies that can be exported all over the world. So we are looking at programmable mobility that will take advantage of smart infrastructure, and that would be more amenable to newer developments. But we also realize that in order to have the impact that we hope, it has to be backwards compatible with the rest of the world. And so I think for us, Woven City is a place where we can test things at scale. It's privately owned land. That means we can move and deploy things with speed, whereas it would be much more difficult to deploy some of these prototype vehicles on public roads in order to get the data that we need to improve them. What we hope to do is be able to develop these technologies and have them apply so that they can help assist in the mobility of people, goods, and information in our existing cities as well. And again, having the underground infrastructure will be very useful to understand the benefits, but my goal is to be able to deploy many of the robots or vehicles that are moving packages around or delivering packages or picking up rubbish in vehicles that can work on our existing road infrastructure, and you don't have to have tunnels. I heard an interesting statistic that Tokyo is one of the cities where the average density of trains has dramatically improved, and every new subway line that gets built in Tokyo has to go deeper and deeper as it goes under the existing subway lines. So now whenever I ride the new lines I have to ride an escalator for 10 minutes just to get to the platform. So I know exactly the problem that you're discussing with regard to London.
And James, I guess the really fascinating point here is, you know, what's the push for this big transformation? Obviously, there are rivals, you need to keep up with them, there are profits to be made. But I watched the speech by your president talking about the urges for him, and he talks, of course, about sustainability and the need to protect the planet, which every key business leader has to address these days. But how genuinely woven into the work that you're doing, and especially with Woven City, is that debate?
You know, one of the interesting historical points that I alluded to earlier, you know, Toyota having its history, and of course, the president being the great grandson of the founding family of the company, started out weaving cloth, and it came from Sekichi Toyota in the end of the 19th century, who saw his mother working so hard weaving and wanted to help her. And there's always been a philosophy of trying to build technology to help people with their daily lives and to produce happiness. And, you know, president has said very strongly that he would like Toyota to be a company that can manufacture happiness instead of manufacturing just cars. And I think that is really fundamental to why this project is so much at the heart of trying to invest in Toyota's future. We are fortunate, because of the hard work of all the employees, to have created enough resources to invest in the future and build products that people rely upon in their daily lives for getting around. And we know that there are many problems related to sustainability, the safety of transportation around the urban centers of the world. And again, Woven City is not really just about one place. It's really about how to accelerate the development of these technologies that will help address some of the problems that are being encountered all over the world. And Toyota, as a global company which sells products all over the world, would like to be a leader. And we hope that the Woven City project can be a strategic competitive asset for accelerating our efforts. But also, as I mentioned, we would like it to be a living laboratory, and as President Toyota said, never finished. And by having an entrepreneurship program or inventors come to develop technologies when they have new ideas, we think that it could be something that can help be an asset and also demonstrate leadership.
James Kufner there, CEO of Woven Planet Holdings. Thank you for joining us. Next, Canada. Urban sprawl is an issue that has plagued North American cities for decades. With cheap and available land, it's traditionally made more sense to build out rather than up. But in order for countries such as Canada to be able to reach their climate goals, urban sprawl needs to be slowed, and cities need to be more sustainable. Regina, the capital of Saskatchewan in Canada, is looking for new ways to densify its city centre. One of the solutions is coming in the form of a downtown community hub in an underutilized historical building. Monocle's contributing editor, Sheena Roster, visited Regina to see how that mid-sized Canadian city is looking to revive its downtown core.
Nestled near the bottom of Canada's flattest province, Regina is typically regarded as a quiet government town that doesn't quite have the same vibe as its rival city, Saskatoon, which sits just a few hours north, and that city has been dubbed the Paris of the Prairies. The Saskatchewan capital, though, is known to be home to a university, several colleges and technical institutes, and who could forget the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, the CFL team for the province. But in this city that's considered mid-size in Canada, with a population of just over 200,000 people, its downtown isn't attracting enough activity.
It's been both exciting and challenging.
That's Sandra Masters. She's been the mayor of the city of Regina for about a year, and she has big plans to revitalize the city's core.
We have an official community plan which deals with the idea of how to both design good and complete neighborhoods when they're greenfield developments, but we also have intensification plans for directing, and we have a goal of directing 30% of new population into our existing neighborhoods. So if you think of inside our ring road, which circles our city, we haven't had the growth we've been expecting or hoping for downtown or even within that area from an intensification perspective. And so currently working on policies and amending existing bylaws and policies to try and encourage that kind of development.
Just a few blocks north of the mayor's office, one of the city's older buildings is sitting largely unused. And several developers are looking to turn it into a community hub that will house everything from restaurants to workout facilities and even a daycare center. Ryan Mulligan is one of the project managers developing this downtown property in Regina.
So this right now where we're standing is an old Eaton's building built in 1919. It was part of Eaton's expansion across Canada, and this was their outpost in Regina. It is a monolith. It's massive. Right now we're standing in something called the Centennial Market. And so the Centennial Market has been kind of this pop-up that's emerged of just kind of small vendors that are using the space right now. But as you'll see as we go through, the building is heavily underutilized. It's technically open right now, but there's nobody in here.
Regina has long been suffering from the same ills of many mid-sized cities the world over. The city's core has been progressively emptying out, and residents have opted to build and buy big suburban homes on the cheap land that surrounds the city instead. So, a new community hub in the city center would actually make for a more sustainable city in the long run. Here's Ryan Mulligan again.
We think if we can do something special here, we can create a model for what it looks like for other mid-sized cities to reinvigorate a downtown that has been emptied out. There is no way we can achieve our climate goals if we keep building further and further out. Climate change needs us to be able to live in a denser space that involves downtown. We hope what we can do with the market is create that incentive to live downtown. We want to build a grocery store so people can make their homes here and childcare spaces that right now that's just lacking in kind of many downtown cores across Canada.
A small proof of concept on what the space could be has already been proven with the Centennial Market being housed in the building for the past several years. And developers like Tyson Lisk, who's a partner with Common Public Design and Development, is only hoping to build on this.
There's rarely any public spaces within Regina, from a seasonal perspective as well. We're a winter city, and so being able to develop space where people can go and be and experience and have access to restaurant, to food, to all these different vibrancies of life is something from a young perspective, definitely with new generations coming up who are looking at livability and why would I choose to be in a city like this? I have a job downtown. Where can I actually go? What can I actually experience? So this fits right into that, really the gap that we see in Regina as a whole right now.
The project's development is still a ways out. It's only going into design and development now, and it will progressively get finished in several phases over the next 4 years. The space will be specifically designed to represent the diversity of the city and the number of communities that call it home. But the city is already planning around it.
As much as people hate it, parking is important as well as all forms of transportation to get there.
Mayor Masters and City Council is already working on a master plan for city transit to create express routing. They are working to get the city to net zero by 2050. And when a project is developed, the city can then design transportation, for example, around that space, she explains.
Fundamentally, it's about activation. It's how many bodies can we put together with a kind of a common purpose or this common sense of community within community is absolutely essential. And when you look at the designs of tech space and you look at the designs of what other cities are doing who have had some success, they build exactly these type of hubs. So these hubs are created and that creates that kind of centered congregation of folks who then feed off of each other and continue to support each other. But it also attracts people to come in and visit those type of spaces.
Now it's just a question of attracting people to the city.
Part of our appeal is that we're affordable, we're easy to get around, and there is a lot of opportunity here for jobs. I think in terms of coming downtown, the product isn't there for them. It hasn't been designed, hasn't been built, or what has been filled up. It's really a little bit of industry consultation because it's not the city that builds these buildings, it's private developers. And so what is it that they need from us in order to create this type of product that would bring more concentrated young people downtown?
Most businesses that operate in Regina are small businesses. Other organizations in the city see the need for a community hub like this. Li Pham is the Director of Entrepreneurship and Strategic Initiatives at Economic Development Regina, and she says this offers so much more than just a spot to fuel the local economy.
I think a space like this not only creates, you know, the quality of life piece, but it also adds to the entrepreneurialism of the city itself. It's a space for entrepreneurs, innovators to come, collide, connect, create new things, find new collaborations. And the fact that this project actually is finding a new and innovative way to use an underutilized space essentially and create something new versus, you know, creating a new building and adding to the urban sprawl is really helpful here in really truly revitalizing and having an asset that's unique and special to the city. And it's built by essentially our local entrepreneurs and community. Regina is on the cusp of growing and expanding with new and innovative entrepreneurs, new businesses coming to town. And this just shows another reason on why people are choosing Regina and investing in Regina to help build the quality of life and position Regina as an incredible city within Canada.
As development on the city's first community hub gets underway, and as the city plans to build around it, the city is working alongside developers to reinvigorate its downtown core, and this will likely only see transformation in about 5 to 10 years. But with the need to redesign cities for a more sustainable future, this sort of foresight might be exactly what this mid-sized Canadian city needs. For Monocle, in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, I'm Sheena Rossiter.
We finish today back in London, where a new way of visualizing the city's network of quiet and interesting walking streets is driving foot traffic in the UK capital. Footways, a collaboration between London Living Streets and Urban Good, aims to document the most enjoyable, efficient and healthy walking routes in the city and offers an alternative to the usual train or bus journey and a way to discover some of the capital's quieter streets. Well, to tell us more, I'm now joined by Footways co-founder David Harrison. David, tell me, what is the idea behind Footways?
It's really a vision. I suppose you might call it, I'm trying to think of the word, for a post-car city, for a city where we see London and other cities as a series of pedestrian networks where pedestrians really do have priority, rather than seeing the city from the point of view of the driver and moving traffic around. We put the pedestrians at the forefront, and that's one of the aims of our map, is to show that how you might see the city as a series of pedestrian walking routes. It is a guide to navigation. It's more a method of communication and a tool for enthusing people. But we very much also use it as a tool for engaging with councils and looking for improvements. By establishing walking routes or a walking network, you can see where the weak links are, and you can talk to councils and say, look, these would be priorities for doing this. And it also, by having these priorities, it's a sort of marker on the ground. It raises the awareness with councils and other key stakeholders.
Are you asking then that councils encourage you with signage, with indications of distances between places? How do we go from the fact that we, you know, most streets have a pavement, but how do we link these up to make them more usable?
We're seeking to encourage councils to go for low traffic streets, to widen pavements, to reduce parking. We're working particularly closely with the railway companies and stations. And we're saying, look at cities like Sheffield here, or Nîmes, or Strasbourg, where the low traffic or pedestrianised streets lead you effortlessly from the station into the areas you want to go to, and overcome the barriers to walking.
I've looked on your site, there's a website. You also print a very nice map encouraging people to take these walkways. How have you managed to do that? Who's supporting you in the background with funding to get this idea up and running?
It's mainly been TfL.
Transport for London.
Transport for London, yes. So we pitched the idea to, first of all, various councils. Camden adopted it in their transport strategy. In November 2019, we held a conference where we got key figures in Westminster, the transport lead for Camden, and the transport lead councillor for the City of London, the very eloquent Oliver Sells at the time. And we brought them together with Will Norman to chair the session. Will Norman is the Mayor's Transport, Walking and Cycling Commissioner. And I think for the first time, some of these people started talking to each other. And it's all about bringing together various councils and seeing central London not as a series of individual spaces, but linking them together. TfL had little money then and liked the idea and paid for us to produce a map and do a little communications. But mostly it's been the work of Emma and myself as volunteers.
And Emma is your co-founder?
Emma Griffin is my co-founder, yes.
And tell me, how do you then dispense the maps? How would I find one of these printed maps?
If you go to our website, they would show you the various stockists. So a major stockist, for example, is Stamford's, who's been very encouraging, the famous map shop in Covent Garden. And they don't say, here's a free map, have it. But you go and ask for it, and they'll give you the map for free, which is one of the conditions of TfL funding it. They've proved very popular, and we have now more or less run out. So we're looking for new funders to print the map again.
So once I have the map in my hand, I can see two points I want to go between. And you've lined the roads you think are most interesting and quiet and enjoyable to walk down. Is that the ambition then, that somebody thinks, maybe I could walk, but I'm not quite, I don't want to kind of be stuck on some highway getting there?
Absolutely. The intention is to say, if you take maybe a minute or two longer, and this is for everyday walking, I could get to where I want to go in a much more enjoyable way. Somebody, I think, called it sustainable hedonism, that people will choose what's the nicest and easiest mode of transport. And we think if walking becomes a nicer and easier mode of transport, this will happen. I mean, I don't know if you've been to Monmouth Street recently.
Yes.
But that has been transformed since COVID, and you see so many more people walking down there. So that's our idea.
Now, we imagine this is a novel idea, but just before we came on air, you hinted that you're kind of steeped for a whole career in this stuff, starting out with looking at medieval maps, when I presume there was no option. You were going to walk pretty much everywhere as a commoner. And then you worked in government as well, looking at walking as well. You've had a long history with the idea of getting us onto 2 feet.
A long history. I helped draft a select committee report on walking in towns and cities in 2000. Which emphasised the importance of walking routes. As often, no recommendations you make in parliament reports are instantly come into practice. But I hope we're on the right tide of history and things are changing. And obviously, your work helps this a great deal.
Now, tell me, obviously, there's the pleasure of walking, but I presume that when you speak to TfL and to councils, there's multitudes of benefits, aren't there? There's benefits for your health. There's taking some pressure off of public services, of fewer people on the buses and on the tubes if we get more people walking.
Absolutely. And there's an element in carbon emissions. The local councils are trying to get to net zero. If you can get people walking, that can help. There's air pollution, of course. And there's even creativity. So Dickens, as you know, if he wanted to write something, would go for a long walk.
And you, when you walk around the city, has it been a pleasure helping put this map together?
It's been tremendous fun discovering the city. I live in inner northeast London, and venturing further west has been a great pleasure, and discovering all sorts of snickets and routes and shortcuts. Because, of course, walking map differs quite a lot from a cycling map in that you can go down those wonderful little alleyways.
Well, David, thank you for coming in to see us. It's called Footways. And what's the website that people need to go to find that?
Footways.london.
Good. Well, I encourage people to have a look because it's an idea that could be copied in many cities. It's a gentle idea, but one that could potentially have quite a big impact on how we live in London and beyond. Thank you so much for joining us, David. Well, that's all for this edition of The Urbanist. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts for your weekly dose of urbanism every Thursday, as well as our sister show, Tall Stories, which premieres every Monday. Today's episode was produced by Carla Tarabello and David Stevens. And David, well, he also edited the show. And to play you out of this week, well, here's Regina, or should that be Regina Spector, with Another Town. Thank you for listening, City Lovers.
Oh, in another town. The light fills my room in another town. I know.